Welcome to Love in Brief, a brief ABDL podcast focused on issues of love. Love, love for yourself, love for others, love for your community, love for your path in life, love for where you are, where you're going, and where you've been.
That sounds amazing. I want that.
And pups.
I can have that right here in this podcast?
You can have that right here in this very podcast.
This is the only thing I need?
Right,
to have
this
total
very
love in my life?
Now, yes.
Where do I sign up for this cult? I mean podcast.
I'll tell you after. Hi.
Hi, I'm Resonant Yes.
Hi, I'm still Road Not Taken.
Still you are.
It's been a minute.
Oh my God, hasn't it just?
It has just.
I mean, it's been like 3 months. I know it's not exactly 3 months, but it feels like it's been an entire season since last we've talked.
It has,
but on the podcast.
But also, since last we've talked, I broke my leg. I was down for the count for 2 full months. I was just,
I know.
I was not a. You might think, oh, why couldn't you podcast with a broken leg? It's because wheelchairs are loud, and
it's complicated. Okay,
couldn't do anything.
I mean, you and I talked yesterday, but
we did.
It's been quite a while.
We did. We didn't meet on the podcast sphere for a while, but we've talked relatively recently and frequently.
Yeah, the summer schedule is a bear. And every year I'm like, okay, podcast friends, we're going to do the summer schedule. And then every year during the summer, I'm like, oh my God, we need to get back on this. But every year, vacations and family and child tending and all the things you do.
And you're going on vacation tomorrow.
I am. I'm leaving for Mexico tomorrow, baby.
Ooh, exciting. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, but things get in the way. So friends, thank you for hanging in there. Of course, I say this every summer, but we will get more regular in the fall. But until then, thank you for hanging in there. And we love having you listen. We are doing a question roundup, which is a thing we do every season, where we just tackle a few questions that have been sitting in our inbox that we really wanted to tackle. Things that maybe aren't a full episode, but we really wanted to get to.
Yeah, they're still important.
Super matter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say, go ahead.
It's our favorite thing to do whenever we haven't done anything for a while, because then it feels like we get to have 5 or 6 conversations with you guys when we haven't had them in a minute.
That's right. And by the way, I'll say this now and I'll say it at the end of the podcast, but if you want to send questions to us, we are very interested in your questions. This is an advice podcast. So if you want to send questions, send them to loveandbrief@gmail.com, which I check the least regularly. My apologies in advance. You can send them to resonantyes@tumblr.com, or you can send them to Instagram, resonantyes there, or FetLife, resonantyes there. In order, the ones I check most often are Tumblr, Instagram, FetLife, email. Should I check my email more? Yes. Do I? I don't. I'm a functioning adult, but not in that sense. So
that's fair.
Yeah, do send your questions. It's just with 4 different venues, sometimes I miss them. Either way, I eventually catch them. I eventually put them in our list. And then when we come to a question roundup, we try and hit them all at once. So we have 4 questions today.
Yeah, we do.
Are you ready?
I'm so ready. Okay, should I ask the first one?
Sure.
Okay. This is from Elio707.
Is this the Ellie, maybe? Maybe?
Maybe. Are you the Ellie?
The one we met in person? Are you the Ellie?
Ellie, are you the Ellie? Either way, I'm sure you're a fantastic Ellie, and
you're
thank you for your
Ellie.
Question. That's Ellie0707 on FetLife, by the way. They say, I'm daydreaming about a fall house party in a cabin by a lake. Ooh, I like
Yeah.
Miss Ellie is a writer. I like this. Where we can do all kinds of fun things. One of the things I would love more info on is the recruiting/vetting process. The presenters touched a little bit on this, but this is a big hang up in my daydreaming. How do I find people who will mesh well together and also make sure that they are safe and compatible?
Ooh,
This is good. This is very good.
This is good. I think sometimes we think about this like a wedding, right? Like, I want to make sure that, you know, nobody's sitting next to somebody that they'll have a political difference with, or I don't want people mixing who disagree on the bride and the groom, whatever.
This is the table settings.
This is the table settings at a wedding. And if you've ever done a wedding before, you know that it's like chess, right? Like you move these pieces around to try and find exactly the right matchup. And it never really comes and you try your best. I don't think events are quite like that. Vetting, super important. Mm-hmm. But trying to get everybody to get along, less important. In so much as. So for vetting for me, and I am not somebody who has thrown a whole bunch of events. So we've done previous episodes on events and how to vet. But I will say, what you're looking for when you're vetting is people who are safe. People who will not show up and violate rules of consent. People who will not show up and violate rules of confidentiality. People who are not so brand new to the community that like literally nobody's ever talked to them before. And we have no idea what they're about. To me, vetting is about, do you have one, maybe two people who will say you are safe, sane, and can operate in a consensual environment, which is different than a wedding, where you have to make sure that like these people are seated next to each other for 3 hours and are going to have something to talk about. In an event environment, if people don't have something to talk about, they will just move on to other people.
That's true.
And they already have something in common that's pretty deep, right?
Right. Actually, if going on the wedding metaphor, I will say I'm a really big fan of the pick a seat, not a side, or like, you know, the whole, because the fact is you do have something in common, just like you do at weddings. That is, the reason you're there is the same. No matter what. And you're not going to be stuck at a table with one group of people for the entire time. You can just pop up, go outside, talk to another person. Inevitably, there will be some downtime and there will be some people who don't mesh. But the best thing you can do is just provide a couple of entertaining things and people will just flock to them as they want to. Yeah. And that's how they'll make connections and find compatibility.
Yeah, the pressure is off a little bit with regards to an event versus a wedding, where in the wedding, like everything about it is a little bit artificial and you are squeezing people together at a table and they've nowhere to go and there's nothing else for them to do. At an event, if you create a handful of things to do, maybe you have a movie night, maybe you have some board games, maybe you have a couple of craft stations, whatever they happen to be, that's something for people to go to, even just having like a cat to pet or whatever. That's something for people to go to that you don't normally have at a wedding or maybe a social party.
Yes.
And they all have something in common other than the bride and groom. So there is something for them to talk about. I don't think you need to go too deep into the vetting process. And again, I am super open to people who have hosted parties and are like, RY, you are super wrong. You have to go get a background check, get some fingerprints.
Yeah. Well, you do need to I'm a big fan of the events I've gone to where people have reached out to me and said, I haven't met them, but they said they've met you, or they said they've met you and so, please tell me about them. Because the thing that you don't know just from seeing people online is, how are they when they're drinking? How are they when they're in public with their kink? How are they? What are they going to do? Like, it is really stressful. You don't want to put your name on something where people end up acting in such a way that you would be ashamed of.
Yeah.
Or uncomfortable with, or would regret inviting them. But it's really not that easy if someone is new. You have to find a way to sort of feel them out ahead of time. And I actually went to an event that was kind of neat not too long ago. Well, no, that's a lie. It's been over a year now. But last year I went to an event where the day before the event, they had a get together, which was kind of a more formal like food and drinks kind of situation, where I think it was a great idea because it let us get to know each other. But it was also a great idea because if there was a red flag, that was the time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it was it was before the weekend get together.
This was like a rehearsal dinner. Like,
yeah.
How's everybody going to do?
Yeah, exactly. It was the rehearsal dinner where somebody could say, look, so glad you showed up. Here's your money back. You don't need to be here. Like, or it did not happen. But I just, it seemed like maybe the people who were in charge were paying a lot of attention. And I think that that's probably not a bad thing.
Oh, that's good.
So finding a way to interact with people who you're not sure of beforehand, it may seem a little untrustworthy up front, but it will pay off in the end, I think. It's better to be a little bit more on the safe side for everyone else who's going to be there.
I remember long before I started the podcast and I was just getting in the community and I would sort of RSVP or express interest in any specific event. I did get a couple of emails from the organizers and they were like, hey, what are you looking for in this event? And what are you excited about? Or, you know, what are you hoping for? Those kind of emails may seem weird on the surface. I only now, in retrospect, realize those may have been vetting emails to see if I write back and I'm like saying something really creepy. I wonder if email is a pretty okay place to start. I don't think it's all of it. And RNT, you introduced the vector of what if there's alcohol there? Like, as you said, like, what if somebody's drinking? Do they get super weird? One thing I would encourage is if you're doing brand new folks to your event, you might consider doing a dry event, or you might consider doing an event where there's not a, like, that's not a primary focus, because sometimes people do get weird when they drink. And we've had folks at events before where they were super cool up until 11:30 or whatever. And then it turns out that when they drink, they turn into jerks. If you're hosting something, just be really clear about your boundaries about drugs and alcohol. There's nothing wrong with having alcohol at your event. There's nothing wrong with allowing legal drugs at your event, whatever it happens to be. But that does introduce a level of complexity. So if you're just starting out for the first time and you're not sure about everybody, maybe there's boundaries you can put around that that will help eliminate the person who's like super cool for the first 4 hours and then totally problematic after.
Agreed. Great.
And then the email exchanges do tell you something. It's a little tough because not everybody expresses themselves well in email, but I certainly have had the experience where somebody was cool for the first introductory note. Hey, RY, would love to talk with you. Great. And then we had a second note and I was like, you are absolutely going to this event just to find somebody that fulfills all of your fantasies and not to meet people, which is a big difference. And those notes are helpful in the vetting process.
Yes, and don't wait to the last minute, because some of the people who I have discovered I did not want to have a long-term friendship with, it has come over the course of time. Just like you said, I've had people who I was like, this is such a cool person. And then when I did not respond to an email, they would respond themselves over and over and over to the point where I was like, oh, this is a problematic human being for me.
Yeah.
And you know, so give yourself enough time. That doesn't mean people are going to turn out to be scary over the course of months. It just means you need time to get to know the people who are coming to your event.
So maybe start a couple of months out, start that communication.
Yes. And I think it's okay to have a cutoff date for coming so that you have enough time to vet everyone before you have them over.
Yeah. I think the big thing, well, two big things. One is, if you get a creepy vibe, if you see repeated, not just sort of like one little thing, but like repeated behaviors, it's okay to say, let's wait until the next one. I don't think this event is right. Number two is, it's also okay to say, hell no. And I know that's really confrontational and really weird. And most of us shy away from that type of confrontation, but it is better to say, this event is not right for you than it is for them to show up and then for you to decide this event is not right for you, which is much harder.
Yes. And I will say from personal experience, and RY, you were a part of this experience, let people vouch for the people who say that they're known by others in the community. Let those people vouch personally for them. I have had a person say I knew them come to a party and be very destructive and harass. Right. The person who inappropriately touched several people at a party because they said that they knew me and they didn't.
They dropped
and
their name.
I didn't know I was the connection to the party. Wow. So make sure that the people, if they're like, oh, I know so-and-so, contact them and let them personally vet those people.
That's so good. So like if somebody had reached out to you, you would have been like, no.
I don't know who that is. Yeah.
I never said this. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, bottom line is like 95% of the folks we've met in this community, whether we've known them or otherwise, have been amazing.
So cool.
But the other 5%, I know that's who you're looking out for. You don't want them at your party because they may not understand boundaries or consent.
You just want it to be safe for the people you really care to make the event safe for. Like you want it to be a safe, loving, open space where people can connect and have fun.
Of course. I get that. So maybe try the message thing. See if you can do some back and forth messaging. As RNT said, plan a couple months out so that you have the time to do the back and forth message thing. See if you can get somebody to vouch for them. If they can't, that doesn't mean end game scenario. It might just mean you need to have a conversation so that you can feel it out. And in the end, if you are open to lots of different kinds of people and then you get a creepy vibe, it's okay to say, hey, I don't think this is the right party for you.
Yes.
Let's spend more time connecting.
It's really important in that case so that you do have autonomy to keep the address to yourself and ask everyone to keep the address to themselves until right before the event.
Yeah.
Unless they're already vetted and you know they're not going to share it. Just, you know, for safety, be safe. Safe is better. Having safe people and there's only 10 people there is better than having 20 people there who might be the best of friends, but you don't know for sure.
Agreed. And I will say it's standard practice. Like I've been to a whole bunch of kink events. It's pretty standard practice to send the address separately from the address.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have a question for you, RNT.
Oh, do you? Okay. All right. I'm ready.
I do. Switchy little foxtographer says, hey, just first want to say I love the podcast. Thank you for making it a thing.
Thank you.
Love you and RNT for being great people. So thank you for that. Hey, I know you've done the episodes with Dr. Rhoda, but wondering if you'd do an episode on how to find an ABDL-friendly therapist or how to talk to a therapist about your ABDL side or anything of the sort. So my God, we should do a whole series on this. Like
that's true.
That's such a great question.
That's true. That is a great question.
We can tackle it in short here and maybe come back to it.
That sounds good.
So, RNT, do you have any advice for somebody who is maybe looking for a therapist, who is not Dr. Rhoda, who will be open to sort of the ABDL thing?
I have a little bit of advice. So, in order to find an ABDL-friendly therapist, my best advice for your first course of action is whenever you're searching for a therapist, you often are on a website where you get to choose, like, I need somebody who can tackle ADHD, anxiety, all these different things. And sexual health or sexual issues or just sex is usually one of them. And whether you connect your ABDL side to just purely sort of like whether you use it for therapeutic reasons, whether it is sexual, those people I have found in my searches and my experience with therapists are usually very open to hearing about different lifestyles just because they're exposed to it. It's not the first time they've ever heard of ABDL. So I guess I think your best first course of action is to choose someone who has that in the list of things that they are comfortable helping with. The other thing I would say is your therapist, once you're comfortable with them, will usually not have, I was going to say they won't have a bad reaction, but I know some people have had that experience where their therapist has had a bad reaction. Mine did not. Mine was very, very understanding and accepting. And I guess you just have to kind of feel it out. But I also specifically chose someone, like I said before, that has a background in helping with sexual issues and just sexuality in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really hard, right? Because the relationship with a therapist is really intimate and important. And it's super hard if you're like months or years into a relationship and all of a sudden the person reacts poorly to your kink. You're like, what do I do from here, right?
Right.
that's really tough. I will say from my own experience, different therapists offer you different things. And a therapist might be amazing, for instance, to talk about relationship issues, or it might be amazing to talk about personality or childhood trauma. And they may be perfect for that. But just like specialists in the medical world, you might have somebody who's amazing at talking to you about your kidneys and somebody who else who is awesome at talking to you about your heart. Not every therapist is going to be perfect for all parts of your therapy needs. And so you might get into a relationship with a therapist who is incredible about talking to you about one thing. And then when you get to kink, maybe they're not the right person. And that doesn't mean that they're a bad therapist. It doesn't even mean they're a bad therapist for you. But you might need to look elsewhere if you discover that they are not open to that experience. The one thing I'm pretty sure about, and I'm pretty rare on this podcast to say I'm sure about things, but one thing I'm pretty sure about is that a non-kink-friendly therapist is not going to be helpful in helping you reconcile your kink with the rest of your life. I've yet to find a non-kink-friendly therapist who has been helpful in helping me come to terms with this part of me that is small but important and will never leave me. So one piece of advice I would offer you is look for the National Coalition on Sexual Freedom's Kink Aware Professionals list. So if you go to kapprofessionals.org, kapprofessionals.org, they do have a list of kink aware professionals that the NCSF supports. You might also, as RNT suggested, just look at their profile. And if you see sex positive or kink aware or kink friendly or sex friendly, you might discover, like, any of those tags are like a pretty good sign things are going to go okay.
Yeah.
One thing to be aware of is that not every sex positive professional is kink positive or is not ABDL positive. They may be like, oh, I'm super into being positive for BDSM kinks, but the second you talk about age play, I'm going to assume that there is something darker at hand. That is not the vast majority. And today, fortunately, we live in an era, thanks to lots of trailblazers, we live in an era where if you are kink friendly, you're probably age play or ABDL friendly. But if you find that you are not compatible with your therapist, at least in this arena, it is 1,000% not only okay, but encouraged. Go find a therapist that works for you. Even if you have to do, you know, let's say your marital therapy with one professional and your kink therapy with another, because you're that attached to your, you know, marital professional, fine. But it's okay to see different therapists for different things.
Absolutely.
And it's okay to change therapists, right?
Absolutely. I will also say that it's in the same way as seeing one doctor for one thing and one doctor for another thing, it is okay to tell the doctor, whether it's a mental health or a physical health professional, this is what I want. So in situations where I've been at a doctor, I've said, I would like to do my best not to take pain medication for whatever is going on with me. It is okay to say to your therapist, this is not something I'm looking to change about myself. I need to let you know so you have context.
Yes.
Like that's exactly what I told my therapist is I don't care to change this. I'm not unhappy with it. It works for me. It's what I want, but you need to know this so that you understand when I tell you what's next.
Yeah.
You know.
That's a great call. Yeah, I remember telling a more recent therapist, not my first therapist, hey, this is part of me. I want you to know about now. I'm not apologetic for it. I don't feel shame about it. And I don't want to change it. It is an awesome part of my life. And if that doesn't work for you, I get it. But let's cover that now so that we can make other plans. I think that is great advice, RNT.
Thanks. I feel like we should just go in wearing a shirt that says daddy kink, not daddy issues.
Daddy kink, not daddy issues is an awesome t-shirt. And please, dude, you have coined both of our t-shirts.
Have I? Oh, no. Nobody's one's listening to the sound of your pants.
Yep. And now daddy kink, comma, not daddy issues, period. That is our next shirt.
Awesome. Let's make the first one first, and then we'll make the second one.
I do have a mouse pad sitting right in front of me that says nobody's listening to the sound of your pants. But
I think I have a magnet.
Oh yeah, we gave those out. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That is so good.
Thanks.
All right, it's your turn for questions.
Oh, it is. Okay, one moment. Let me see. Okay, so I think we have to pay for that if we use it.
Oh yeah. What if I sing it poorly? There was no chance I was going to sing that on tune, so it doesn't matter.
So I believe this is from Lunisian. Do you think that's how you pronounce that?
That sounds right.
Okay, Lunisian on Tumblr says, "Hi, I just started listening to your podcast and it has been a great help. Awesome. I'm just very awesome. I'm just starting to accept that I am a DL after 6 years of repressing it. Welcome to the light side. We're happy to have you.
Yep.
It's been a bit of a struggle. I'm wondering if you had any advice on that. Introducing to a Nilla single Christian man. Any tips on how to start talking about what we like when in a new relationship, assuming they're fairly vanilla? How did y'all begin talking about it?"
Ooh.
Oh, well, for that last part, we were both...
Yeah, we were all in.
...heavily kinky whenever we decided to go in on this. So how to talk to a Nilla single Christian man about it?
Yeah.
I'll let you speak to that, as you were not Nilla, but you were a single Christian man at one point.
I was. Yeah. Holy moly, what a question. And such a good question. Lunisian, thank you for sharing this. I wish I had an easy answer. I don't, but I probably have a long-winded multiple answer to this. First off, congratulations on beginning to accept who you are. So when you say, "I'm accepting I'm a DL after 6 years of repressing it," what I hear, perhaps right, perhaps wrong, is that this is part of you, that it's not something that is going away. It's not a passing fancy. So congratulations on saying, "I'm turning the corner from trying to get rid of it or trying to ignore it or repress it to accepting it." That's a huge and possibly the most difficult step. Now, that's not what you asked. What you asked is, how do I introduce somebody else? In particular, a Nilla Christian man. I have never tried to introduce my kink to a man as a romantic partner, but I have certainly tried to introduce my kink to a Nilla or two.
I would say, sorry to interrupt. I would say not only that, you have introduced it to a Nilla Christian woman and also a Nilla single Christian man who you did not have a romantic relationship with.
That's true.
So one of whom was on the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go back and listen to R.Y. Talks to His Bestie or whatever that one's called. But here's the short lesson that I have learned. I hope this is helpful. I'll try and do it in bullet points. One, you don't need to be ashamed of your kink. I know it's weird. I know it's different. And I know that it is not something that most people talk about. When you introduce it, you want to come from a place of recognizing that you are okay. You are fine. Nothing is wrong with you. And nothing is wrong with your kink. Age play, ABDL, tends to get sort of lumped into this creepy territory, right? But when you go to a new person, if you come in thinking, "I'm creepy," that's going to radiate off of you. If you come in thinking, and this is what takes the work of acceptance. If you come in thinking, "I am okay. My kink is not only acceptable, but it is a beautiful part of me," that is also going to radiate off of you. So do the hard work. It may take months. It may take therapy. It did for me. Do the hard work of recognizing your kink as not only okay, but awesome. That way, when you come into that conversation, you're not apologizing for it. You're saying, "Hey, I want to tell you about some really cool parts of me. I'm great at baseball. I can name pi to 30, decimal places. And by the way, I have this cool kink."
Yeah.
And if the person doesn't accept, that's okay. But it won't be because you apologized for it out of the gate like it was a problem.
Yeah. In the same way, any kind of deal breaker would be a deal breaker no matter what. Sometimes with some people, it will be a deal breaker, but not with someone who will be worth your time in the end. I mean, if that makes sense. If someone is immediately going to say, no, thank you, you want to know. And you want to go find someone who will say, yes, please. You know, let me try that out. Let me see.
So, when it comes to the Christian side, so I lived very actively as an evangelical Christian for a number of years. I don't claim that role today, so I may be out of touch, and I recognize that. I will say there was nothing in my experience as a person living as a Christian that directly contradicts being an EBDL. There was the occasional, like, I would hear a Bible verse about, like, when I was a child, I, you know, acted like a child. Now that I'm an adult, I behave like an adult. That's kind of a stretch, right? To for me, to engaging in sex and love and kink, that one, it's kind of an outlier. Other than that, there wasn't a whole lot in my evangelical or Christian upbringing, and I recognized those two things are different, that said that you shouldn't be an ABDL. And I would have a hard time pointing to the part in the orthodoxy and or the scripture that says you shouldn't be an ABDL. I think there was a lot of cultural baggage around being an ABDL. But even if your stance is, I am 100% in on this orthodoxy, or I am 100% in on the scripture, if that's your choice, I still have a hard time saying you shouldn't be an ABDL.
Yeah. And I would recommend going to, going on FetLife or a group like that, or a space like that, maybe even Tumblr. And there is going to be a group of Christian ABDLs. And as I have no advice to give in that arena, I think there's probably people who have already thought through this in a really logical way who can help you get, I wouldn't say your argument started, but help you start your case for why it's, for whatever questions this person might have for you, help you explain in a way that will be acceptable and just make sense to them, because it doesn't have to be acceptable to them. But if you care about this person, you might want to help them understand.
Yeah. One of the lines that gets me from your question is, any tips about how to start talking about it? How to start talking about what we like when in a new relationship. So to me, that's a little different than, like, is this okay? So I want to address that. How did y'all begin talking about it? As I said, and as R&T said, we kind of started like this, right? Like, we found each other already in this space. However, when you start talking about it, it's okay to talk about what you like. It's okay to talk about what doesn't work. And if you're in a relationship or in a potential relationship with somebody who's really excited to do things that do it for you, and you're exchanging those moments of, like, what does it for you? And the other person is like, oh my God, I fucking love it when somebody goes down on me, or I fucking love it when somebody talks to me like this. And you're like, I fucking love it when somebody does this ABDL stuff to me. Those things are equal and okay. And if you're with somebody who's really excited about getting you excited, you will find out when you tell them, hey, did you know I happen to have a button that if you push it, I will go bananas? If they're not excited about that button, that tells you something. That doesn't mean they're a bad person. That just tells you this may not be a great partner.
Yeah, agreed.
I happen to have, I mean, how great is it, R&T, that, like, we have a turn-on switch that you can flip whenever you want in the context of a healthy relationship, and I will be, or you will be, over the moon. How great is that?
It's fantastic.
Yeah. And so if you share that with a partner and they're like, I don't want to hit your turn on switch. Okay. You might not be a great partner for me. Like, you're fine, but I'm telling you where the button is.
Exactly. 100% agree. 100% agree. And I don't think that there's anything other than, as you said before, culturally, that makes, I want you to put this thing in your mouth more or less okay, then I want you to put this thing on your butt. You know what I mean? Like, it's whatever it is that makes you feel turned on. And, you know, you'll find out really quickly whether that's somebody who you're talking to is somebody who, like you said, wants to press that button. And I wish you luck. I hope that that person really does want to press all your buttons, the good buttons.
Me too. And if not, I hope there are 100 more waiting in line to press those buttons. I just love that you are asking now so that you can come out of the gate saying, here are the buttons. Here's all the stuff I love. If you are interested in it, great. If you're not, that's okay. Because the odds of you getting your needs, wants, and desires met go way up. And I'm assuming you're asking them the same thing.
Yes, I hope so too.
Yeah. All right, I've got one for you, RNT. You ready?
Yes, I'm ready. But I've read this one, and I believe that this one is something that you might have more insight into. But please, please read on.
Well, let's take a running head start. Okay. KJDL on FetLife says, I like when you talk about dominance wearing diapers. My wife still isn't into diapers other than letting me let them wear for my pleasure and nothing with us together. But we've allowed each other to search desires outside the marriage with other people. Besides what you've said in your podcast, could you share with me more insight into being dominant while wearing diapers? I love this question.
I have very little insight into this question. but I will tell you the one little bit that I have up front.
Yeah.
I played into a dominant role in my relationship with RY and wore, and it didn't turn him off at all. Mine was often for a more medical reason, but I felt bigger and more dominant when I was wearing things like my pull-ups, my silhouette pull-ups, than I was when I was wearing like little butt diapers. Like, I don't think I've ever been in a little diaper and felt dominant.
Ah, okay. So that was the line for you, was when?
When I was in my, like,
in like a printed, like.
Yeah, but like if I was in something that was like pink with like black flowers on it, I was like, yeah, I'm big. You know, like, I don't know that I have anything else that I can add to this, but I'm happy to listen.
Well, no, it's helpful. So like when we would switch, you didn't feel not dominant.
While wearing.
If you were, you could wear a diaper, but it had to be like a certain kind.
Yes, yes. There was a really strange line for me where I could just say, this is because I will otherwise have an accident. You know what I mean? Like,
sure, sure. Yeah, I mean, I love this question, KJDL. I think we deserve to do several episodes on this. My bottom line is that dominance and submission has almost nothing to do with what you're wearing, if not nothing. And I know, my God, do I get it. Like the symbolism, the feel of a diaper or a collar or a harness or a cage, I get it. Like symbolism is extremely powerful. And a lot of kink hangs on symbolism. In fact, the concept of a fetish literally is about an object that imbues power. So I get that. With that said, if you are well acquainted with your sexuality and well acquainted with diapers, that object is only imbued with the power that you give it. And you can choose, and I have, to see a diaper as inherently submissive, or you can choose to see a diaper as neutral. It's just your clothing. Or if you want, you can choose to see a diaper as dominant. I know, head explodes, right? Our culture, and I won't downplay this, has certainly played up the idea of a diaper as submissive. I get that. There is nothing about what you're wearing that determines what your vibe is with your partner or partners. If you are connecting with somebody who is submissive and you choose to be dominant, there is nothing about your underwear that will determine whether or not that is okay. Now, that partner may have preferences about your underwear, and those preferences may involve not being diapers. Please see our previous discussion on what it's like to introduce somebody to diapers and whether or not they're okay with it. I will say, dominance and submission are dynamics, and dynamics are chosen between two adult humans. Those dynamics are irrespective of your clothing, of your physical size, of your physical ability. those dynamics are an absolute choice that you navigate together in conscious conversation. So I have done the dominant thing with a diaper on, and it has gone awesome. I have done the dominant thing without a diaper on, and it has gone awesome. What's most important is that, and this is the real mindfuck of the thing, is that you go in to that dominant experience, and assuming that's what the role you want to take, you go into it with a dominant mindset of, I choose to bring this dominant energy. I choose to bring this dynamic to my partner, regardless of what I'm wearing. Or potentially, with regard to what I'm wearing, because I'm going to make them change my diaper, or I'm going to make them deal with my diaper, or whatever. That's all dominant choices. All of the associations we make to diapers being submissive, those are all cultural choices that we've made. And those choices can be unmade the same way that we choose to unmake all kinds of cultural choices to engage in kink that is countercultural. Bottom line, this is a huge sandbox that you get to play in. And nobody gets to determine that for you. Now, if it turns out that you put on a diaper and you can only feel submissive, that's okay. That may mean that this is not a great space for you to play dominant in. Fine. But if you want to be dominant and diapered, there is absolutely nothing stopping that other than some cultural programming that you have the strength and the choice to reprogram.
Beautifully said. Beautifully said.
I honestly thought you were going to argue with me, RNT. I will say, I thought you were going to say, RY, that is horseshit.
No, I was going to say, I held off the entire time you were talking, but I really did think that you were going to say that your bottom line was either yellow or blue. I thought it was going to be like a joke about diapers, and it turned out to be a really beautifully said point. So then
instead, I landed a salient point.
Yeah, like I kept my mouth shut, and I was like, well, shit, the tone of this is not what I thought it was.
I guess this is where this is going.
Well, look, I won't argue with you. I will say I am one of those people who has a very difficult time separating myself. And it has nothing to do with my partner, but I can't really relax when my partner is wearing a diaper. And I know that about myself. And that's totally fine as well. So if I did want to put in there that, like, yes, please feel free to tell your fellow diaper loving partners this, but if they are like me, you also have to take that into account, that sometimes it can properly get you out of your own headspace.
Neither
headspace is more important than the other. I'm not saying that you should change what you're doing, but you should just be aware of it.
Yeah, thank you for calling that out. So I'm talking about your approach to dominance, but you're right. Your partner also has a view on these symbols, and symbols are so powerful. That may not be a place that they can get past or that they're willing to change their cultural code for.
Yeah.
That makes total sense. I remember we had a question. I don't know if you remember, RNT, but we had a question years ago from somebody who said, I am dominant, but I have a disability and I use a wheelchair. Can I still be dominant? Mm. I don't know if you remember that.
I don't, but it sounds familiar.
Yeah. And, you know, we followed up and we chatted and, you know, The end result of that conversation was, of course, there are so many ways. Dominant is a headspace. It is not a function of one's legs or one's body. But that took some education for me, and I had to learn my way through that experience that person was having. And in the end, they were like a fucking amazing dominant. So like, I remember being like, whoa, you're nailing this. There are symbols in our culture that seem to be relevant for one reason or another. And it does take work to say, this symbol is not my starting place for dominance or submission. And so what is it about my experience that I'm going to choose to look at in order to take that role for dominance or submission? And we had the same question about people who have larger bodies. And they said, I don't feel submissive, or I don't feel little. I mean, you and I have tackled that many times, and we've talked about, this is about cultural codes, and this is about questioning those cultural codes and undoing those cultural codes to recognize that this is all about headspace and dynamic.
100%.
It has little to do with your body or what you're wearing or whatever, right?
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
Yeah. With that said, though, I recognize those cultural codes are very strong. And if you're with a partner who cannot see a person in a diaper as being dominant, then that's a barrier. And that is real. And I want to honor their perspective, too. It may not be a good partner for, you know, for you to wear a diaper and be dominant.
Yes.
And that's okay.
Weirdly, the size thing doesn't bother me at all, but the diaper thing does.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just...
Which I totally get and respect that. Like, that for you is a thing that you're like, if you're wearing a diaper, that doesn't feel dominant to me.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a hard time getting into submissive headspace.
Yes.
And I'm the other way. Like, I love to switch. And if the person who is dominant is in a diaper, that's fine. And if they're not, that's fine too. For me, it's okay. So I'll just encourage, like, this stuff is not as anchored to your clothing or your body or your accoutrement or whatever your symbols are, as it's not directly concretely tied. You may be able to change that, and you may not. And you may not just not want to do the work to change that. And that's okay too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm still a fetishist. Like, I still have symbols, and those symbols mean a lot to me. So I get it.
Yes. It's just how you think about it.
Right. Right. And there's no pressure to change your approach. The question is, how do I integrate my approach into my life, into my love,
yes,
into my sex, into my romance? That's up to you.
That's right.
RNT, I've had a damn good time today. We waited all summer for this. Aha, why did we wait? We could have done this earlier. This is great.
I was in a wheelchair.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that part where I was...
Yeah, you had a rough go this summer.
Yeah, it's been a rough one.
Do you want to give an update? Are you doing better?
I'm doing better. I texted RY yesterday and let him know that I fell down the stairs because my leg is still 50% broken and I am doing way too much as per usual. But I'm trying. It's working out okay.
And you used a wheelchair for a while, but you're pretty awesome at it.
Thanks. Yeah,
you did pretty well.
I got muscles. For 2 months, I had arm muscles, and it was the best arm muscles I've ever had, and now they are well on their way to going back to just being useless arms. But
they're no longer big and hulking biceps.
They're not, but for a minute there, I was getting comments, and I was so... I had such a big head about it. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I'm killing it. I'm killing it.
I was like, I don't know the names of them, but I have back and front muscles on my arms. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Top ones and bottom ones.
RNT, anything else you want to share today?
Have fun on your vacation.
Thank you. I will. I will. I'm really looking forward to it.
Good.
And we will be back with more Love and Brief. Our summer schedule is wrapping up. We're going to have all kinds of guest hosts and new topics, and we've got an announcement coming on some changes to the podcast, so we'll talk about that soon, but so thrilled to get to do this, and I don't think I talk about it enough, but this is such an honor to be able to reach people in this community this way, and I love getting to do this, and I know you do too.
I do.
In whatever frequency we get to do it.
Yes. I love you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll be back. But in the meantime, this has been Love in Brief.